This jacket is dry clean only, which means it's dirty.
Season 1, 2, 3.
Coming to you from the mean streets of Country Club Drive, this is the ABCs and 123s of rock. I'm your host, Tony Phillips, along with our co-host, Mr. Randy McGuire. Randy, how you been?
I'm doing great, Tony. Doing a lot better than I was. Feeling better for a change and ready to get to it.
Good deal. There's been some letters thus far that have been pretty difficult. There are others that there was a plethora of bands to pick from, and it was difficult in the sense of who do you not talk about.
Right.
I found 14 bands this time, and I think between them, I think I've got enough to cover me.
Hey, before we get started, I want to say one thing. You know, I always give you props on all the music and all that. That's all you. I do sing all the vocals on all the music that you produce. But I've had a lot of people ask me, which Beatles song is that in the Beatles mini episode? And again, that's all Tony. So, you know, props to you, brother.
I busted out the sitar and everything for that. I had to get a little George Harrison going. Nice. And stuff. It was a lot of fun. That was a pretty good episode. I enjoyed myself immensely.
Round one.
The old man sitting there, his head bowed down. Every now and then, you'll take a look around.
Now, you listen to this, and it sounds like something from perhaps a Broadway show or something like that. It has a Broadway panache.
Yeah, I was trying to come up with a Broadway show that started with J and say, is this, but I can't do it.
Now, keeping this song in mind. Same band. Of course, we are talking about Judas Priest. Technically formed in 1969 in Birmingham, England. Al Atkins, the original lead singer. The name comes from the Bob Dylan song, The Ballad of Frankie Lee and Judas Priest. The quick backstory is Al Atkins started a band called Freight in 1970, which featured guitarist K.K. Downing and bass player Ian Hill. They had the good fortune of playing with the Jimi Hendrix Experience. Certain things happened. Atkins went his separate ways, and 1973, Rob Halford joined as the lead singer, and he got the gig by virtue of being Ian Hill's girlfriend's brother. That's a nice way to get a gig. In 1974, they signed with Gull Records, who suggested to them to get a second guitarist, and that second guitarist was none other than Glenn Tipton. In 1974, they released their debut album called Rockarola. In 1976, they released Sad Wings of Destiny, which contained the song that you heard at the beginning called Epitaph,
right.
Tyrant, the wonderful Victim of Changes, and maybe one of the best opening riffs ever.
You're in for surprise, you're in for a shock. In London town streets, when there's darkness and fire. When you least expect me, and you turn your back, I'll attack.
Of course, a song about Jack the Ripper. In 1977, they released Sin After Sin, which was produced by Deep Purple bassist Roger Glover.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It was also their major label debut. They had some issues trying to find drummers all along the way. They got Simon Phillips to play drums on Sin After Sin. I had the song Sinner, Last Rose of Summer, Dissident Aggressor. You know, I have to say this about Judas Priest. They have some great hard-driving metal stuff.
Okay.
Their slow songs are some of the best, quote-unquote, metal slow songs you've ever heard.
All the
evoke a lot of Pink Floyd in their early stuff. Also on Sin After Sin was the song Diamonds and Rust, which was a Joan Baez cover.
Joan Baez, yes.
They made it into a beast of a song.
Right.
In 1978, they released the album Stained Class, which contained the song Better By You, Better Than Me, which was Spooky Tooth,
yeah.
Beyond the Realms of Death, White Heat Red Hot. Also in 1978, the album Killing Machine came out, which was also known in the United States as Hellbent for Leather,
right.
Which had another classic live song, and it was a cover, because you know how you like a good cover.
I love a good cover.
Peter Green, Fleetwood Mac's The Green Man, at least you with a two-pronged crown. Now, I'm sure if you listen to this and you listen to the Fleetwood Mac version, you will notice some stark differences.
A tiny difference.
Just a little bit of a difference. Unleashed in the East came out in 1979. That was their first live album, and it set the bar for metal live albums. And then in 1980, British Steel came out. British Steel, interestingly enough, was recorded in Ringo Starr's house, and it was the first album that had drummer Dave Holland. Metal Gods, United, Living After Midnight, and Breaking the Law.
You mentioned Living After Midnight and now Breaking the Law. These are probably my two favorite Judas Priest songs. So,
yeah, British Steel was probably the album that sold me on them. And then, of course, like Screaming for Vengeance and Defenders of the Faith later on. Sad Wings of Destiny was my favorite Priest album for a long time.
I love the album cover, too.
Oh, yeah. 1981's Point of Entry came out, had Heading Out to the Highway. 1982, we got Screaming for Vengeance, which was the first album that they did not record in England. They actually recorded in Spain and in parts of Florida. We've got another thing coming.
Right.
The title track, Screaming for Vengeance, which is a beast of a song, and Electric Eye. Then in 1984, Defenders of the Faith came out, had Free Will Burning, Sentinel, and Some Heads Are Gonna Roll. And then comes 1986's Turbo. It was originally intended to be a double album called Twin Turbos.
Okay.
Locked In.
I love Locked In.
Parental Guidance, Wild Nights, Hot and Crazy Days. This is also the first album that they did that used guitar synthesizers.
Yeah.
In 1989, they put out Ram It Down, which was the last album with Dave Holland playing drums. And then in 1990, former Racer X drummer, Racer X, Paul Gilbert's first big band, Scott Travis, became the drummer for Judas Priest.
He's a beast.
After Painkiller in 1990, Rob Halford left the group to form a band called Fight. In the meantime, Tim Ripper Owens joined and sang on two albums, 1997's Jugulator and 2001's Demolition.
You know Ripper Owens is from Ohio.
Yes, he is. Yeah,
he's related to a guy I work with.
My first pick, Judas Priest.
Knew it was coming, couldn't wait for it.
Great pick.
My first pick. Love it. Love the guy. Love the band. Still one of my favorite guitar players today. And they have a wide catalog, but you only have to play one song. That is the James Gang, obviously lead guitar player, Joe Walsh of Eagles fame.
Before Eagles fame.
Yeah, James Gang was opening up for the Eagles, and he would come on. They would cart him out in a big roadie kit, big box, and he would climb out of it and then just start playing, and people would lose their mind.
J. James Gang.
James Gang.
Jimmy Fox.
Yes.
His daughter went to college with my cousin. They were roommates together in college. And
well, they were formed in Cleveland, Ohio. Just that's one of those go-to classic rock bands that you could just sit and listen to all the time. You know, I think they had like 10 studio albums. Your album, James Gang Rides Again, third, Straight Shooter. Now, that was off the top of my head, so I can only go up to like 72.
When did Joe Walsh join the Eagles? 74?
I think it was 73 or 74.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, again, I let the music speak for itself, and I could have played Funk 49 all day. Taking my time, choosing my line, trying to decide what to do. Looks like my style. I actually have this album, vinyl, and I listen to it all the time. Love it. Seems to me you don't want to talk about it. Seems to me you just turn your pretty head and walk away.
I kind of feel like you cannot go wrong with James Gang.
I agree.
You know, on a warm summer night with a drink and James Gang Rides Again, just put it on loop.
They kind of went different directions and a few other things. You know, one of them went, you know, Guess Who. And then Tommy Bolin was in the James Gang one time.
For a little bit.
One of my favorite guitar players. We really haven't, I mean, I know we've touched on him a couple different times, and we'll talk about him more, but, you know, guitar genius in my mind, gone way too soon. But, you know, keeping the first pick nice and short, I'm going James Gang.
That's a great pick because, if for nothing else, Joe Walsh. Joe Walsh is he's a character. And it just so happens that he is a great guitar player.
He is a great guitar player. Did you ever see him on the Drew Carey Show?
I did. I remember him. Good old Ed.
His guitar playing's kind of sloppy.
Yeah, and he looks kind of slow.
So we're agreed he's in?
Oh, yeah. This guy will make us look great.
Ed! Hey, Ed!
Ed!
Hey, congratulations, man. You got the job.
Whatever.
Some of the other guitar players that they that had a tryout, Dave Mustaine, Slash, Rick Nielsen, Roy Clark.
Yeah, that was a really good episode. If anybody
look
has
it up
access
on,
to Drew Carey Show.
Well, it's on YouTube. Just look
Is
up
it just the clips on YouTube.
Drew Carey guitar auditions. It's
very
great.
Cool.
Yeah, that's my first pick, James Gang.
My second pick. Started with the intentions of being a backup band for more prominent Bay Area artists. They were originally called the Golden Gate Rhythm Section, featuring Neil Sean and Greg Raleigh from Santana.
How old was Neil Sean when he was in Santana? Like 15, 16 years old?
I think he was 16 or so.
Can you build? I mean, that's just amazing to me.
Yeah, Sean's always been one of my guilty guitar pleasures. If you need somebody that can just blow off some steam, Neil Sean is your guy.
I'm going to tell you something. I love Neil Sean. And what I'm going to say might come off like I'm bashing him. But the last time I saw Neil Sean, he is the leader of that band. No doubt about it. But it's a little pretentious when you have three guitar solos in one show.
I have to be honest. I really like early Journey. Like I said, Greg Raleigh, Neil Sean from Santana. Ross Valerie and George Tickner came from Frumious Bandersnatch. And originally the first drummer was Prairie Prince, who later went on to be drummer for Tubes, and he was actually replaced by none other than Ainsley Dunbar, who we will talk about. I'm sure we've talked about him before. We'll keep on talking about him. They released Journey in 1976. They had Look Into the Future, at which George Tickner left the band after helping write the songs. 1977, Journey Next, which had Robert Fleischman join the band, and he became like their first legitimate frontman because Greg Raleigh was doing all the vocals along with playing keyboards. And then we got to probably the defining album for them, 1978's Infinity, which included a young man by the name of Steve Perry. And Robert Fleischman would eventually be the last lead singer of the Vinnie Vincent Invasion.
Oh, I did not
After
know that.
Mark Slaughter and a couple other people. Infinity, great album. Very first song that Steve Perry wrote for them. Here I stand so patiently for your lights to shine on me anytime, feeling that way. Lights.
I love Lights.
Patiently.
Will in the Sky.
1979's Evolution was the first album with drummer Steve Smith. Fantastic drummer. Featured Love and Touch and Squeezin'.
Which is what they close with now, and it's great.
1980's Departure. Walks Like a Lady in Any Way You Want It. And then in 1981, they had a fellow from the Babies join, Jonathan Cain. It's safe to say all of the hits, the big, big hits that you heard from Escape onward were written by Jonathan Cain.
Yes, 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 yes.
Great keyboard player.
I'm going to back up, if you don't mind.
Back up.
Departure, that's my favorite Journey album, just for the simple Good Morning Girl and Stay a While. Well, if I made tapes or CDs back in the day, but if I put it somewhere now, those two songs are one song to me. Can share the night, it goes on and on.
Stone in Love, which my metal band tried to play.
I love that song.
Because we had a singer that could sing it.
Oh, really?
It caused a little friction because some people wanted to go a little heavier, and I really love the melody of Stone in Love. Still They Ride, which is probably one of my favorite Journey songs. Open arms.
Yeah.
Who's Crying Now? And Who's Crying Now?
Yeah. Back up for just one second. Never played it. Did you ever see the video game Journey Escape?
I remember vaguely.
It's probably the worst video game besides the ET one that they rushed to get, but probably one of the worst video games you've ever seen.
1983, Frontiers came out. Escape was huge, massive, massive, massive radio. But what happened in between 1981 and 1983? MTV.
Right.
Separate Ways,
right,
which was a big, 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 big song, and with a really kind of goofy video.
Very goofy.
And Steve Perry with his perfect mullet. He had wonderful mullet. Jonathan Cain air keyboarding. I mean, there's air guitar, but air keyboarding and air drumming is a little bit odd. Separate Ways, Send Her My Love, Faithfully.
Faithfully is awesome.
The song Frontiers to me is, gosh, that is a good song. You know, every once in a while, they will hearken back to their kind of post-Santana,
right,
progressive kind of stuff. Great stuff. There was a song that did not make that album, but it was featured in the movie Vision Quest. And I hold Vision Quest very close to my heart. Wonderful movie, coming of age kind of thing. Only the Young.
So when you was younger, did you drive around with a thermos full of tea just in case you had to change somebody's tire, a rich person's tire?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I did. But yeah, Linda Fiorentino and Matthew Modine, man, that was a wonderful, wonderful movie. I will always love this song.
It's a great song.
You know, for my own particular private reasons or whatever. And then like my senior year of high school, Raised on Radio came out.
Right.
There was no Ross Valerie, but they did have OK Dawg. Randy Jackson come in and play a little bass. And, you know, Journey's use of harmonies, some of the best stuff you'll ever hear.
Taken for granted, I'd say.
After Steve Perry left the band and Steve Algieri came in, and then what's the kid's name now? Benny Medina? Is that right?
Ardell Pinella. Ardell Pinella.
Boys, Journey's current singer is Arnel Pineda.
who's Benny Medina? Did he play bass for like Twisted Sister or something? I don't
watch the Journey documentary. I mean, the kid is phenomenal and he puts on a great show. I mean, he's all over the place and sounds just like Steve Perry. And Steve Perry don't mind.
My second pick, Journey.
Great, great, great pick. All right, my number two pick. We've talked a couple different times about this person, and we're going to go with... Joan Jett started her career with the Runaways, all-girl group, which, have you seen the Joan Jett or the Runaways movie?
I saw the preview for it here, actually just not probably a month ago.
Joan Jett was a guitar player. They found Sherry Curry and Lita Ford. I freaking love Lita Ford. I mean, you want to talk about a badass guitar player, a little crazy.
And I'm sure back then she was probably even a little wilder.
I would say so, but you know, if you watch the Runaways movie, it's great. But, you know, a young band, girls like that, taken advantage of, just all the stuff, crazy stuff that goes on. But Joan Jett, she emerged from the Runaways and tried and tried and tried. And she's like turned down by like 40 record companies and just decided to do her own album, sold them out of the car, and it just went nuts. So finally was signed to a big deal.
Now, did they make her become Joan Jett and the Blackhearts?
No, I think she was the one who insisted on the Blackhearts, because I think forever they wanted her to be Joan Jett. They just didn't want her. They didn't think that a girl rock star was going to be successful. She almost wanted to be just the Blackhearts, but then went with Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. A lot of the songs that Joan Jett wanted to do in the Blackhearts, they did not want to do. Kim Fowley didn't want to do. And so when she started her solo career, she did a lot of those songs herself.
This was the first Joan Jett song I remember.
This is the first Joan Jett song, period. MTV, radio, it was everywhere.
And then several months later, I Love Rocky Road by Weird Al.
It's funny you say that, and you'll find out why later, too.
Why, you got Weird Al Yankovic in there somewhere?
You'll see. I just saw her 6 months ago. She and Cheap Trick share a headlining bill. I didn't care who came on first or who on second.
Yeah, that's a no-lose situation there.
She's on the big Motley Crue Def Leppard Poison tour, the big one that keeps getting postponed. Another one of my favorite Joan Jett songs. And if you're a wrestling fan, Ronda Rousey comes to the ring playing this.
Yeah, Joan Jett, she just, you know, a lot of punk sensibility, but like a lot of kind of almost throwback 50s with dirt. With a lot
no,
of
you
edge.
Are correct. You hit the nail on the head with that. It is dirty. It's rock. It's
very melodic. She's very melodic and stuff, yes, in her music. Very cool.
For a little bit of the older crowd, you may not have heard her version, but you've heard this song.
Who can turn the world on with a smile? Who can take a nothing day and suddenly make it all seem worthwhile? What is your girl and you should know it? With each glance and every little movement you show it. Love is all around. No need to fake it. You can never tell. Why don't you take it? You're gonna make it after all. How will you make it?
whenever you hear a Joan Jett sing, you immediately know it's Joan Jett singing.
Yeah. So that's my number two. Love Joan Jett.
That's a good pick.
Thank you.
So my third pick, these guys were headliners at the Monterey Pop Festival, the Isle of Wight, Woodstock, and the infamous Altamont concert with the Rolling Stones, Gimme Shelter, where their lead singer got knocked out.
You got knocked the f*** out!
One pill makes you small, and the ones that mother gives you. When she's 10 feet tall.
The original lineup of Jefferson Airplane: Marty Balin from Cincinnati, Ohio, Paul Kantner, Grace Slick, Norma Kalkinen, whose nickname was Blind Thomas Jefferson Airplane, and that's how they got the name of the band. Jack Cassidy and Spencer Dryden on drums. Marty Balin left in 1971. The band split into Hot Tuna, which was Norma Kalkinen and Jack Cassidy's band, and Jefferson Starship in 1974. Balin eventually rejoined Jefferson Starship. The early Jefferson Airplane stuff can be pretty much condensed into two songs off of their very first album called Surrealistic Pillow. And those two songs are White Rabbit and Somebody to Love.
Right.
Which I don't know if you remember Cable Guy.
Cable Guy, yeah.
Yeah. So Jefferson Airplane put out albums till about 72, I think. And then, like I said, they split into Hot Tuna and Jefferson Starship, which they put out a couple albums. There was an album called Red that had the song Miracles. I didn't realize that was a Jefferson Starship song until, you know, like not today, but pretty recently. I was like, oh, yeah, that is Jefferson Starship. In 1979, Freedom at Point Zero comes out, and that's the first album to feature Elvin Bishop singer Mickey Thomas. If you don't know who Elvin Bishop is, Fool Around and Fell in Love. Right. Once you listen to Fool Around and Fell in Love, and then you listen to Jane, you're like, oh, hey, that's the same dude.
Yep.
In 1981, Modern Times came out. I'll admit, as a 11, 12-year-old, I kind of had the hots for 80s Grace Slick. And it may have just been her makeup and her choice of attire. Because every once in a while, she'd have her boobs sticking out and stuff like that. And it's like, oh, yeah, I can like her.
She's I love right. Grace Slick to this day. I was listening to an interview, and she goes, I don't want to sound, you know, pretentious or anything. She goes, but I'm a rock star. This house that we're doing this interview in, music paid for this. So I'm a singer, but my daughter didn't like me as a baby. I'm saying, where's she going with this? She goes, because I sing like this, and she's yelling, and she goes, I can't sing lullabies. And she's just a badass to this day.
She eventually retired. She's a visual artist now. She does a lot of painting.
Oh, she's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I can't escape the fact that when the video for Stranger came out, I was like, wow, she's pretty hot. And Winds of Change, that was another good one. And, of course, Find Your Way Back.
Right. I remember one thing, Grace Slick, again, rock star, making tons of money, and her jewelry, her accessory, it was this plastic top to a six-pack. It was hanging on her. I just thought that was hilarious.
She's a character.
Yeah.
And she did not take 1 ounce of shit from anybody.
Yeah.
From anybody.
Still doesn't.
Including Paul Kantner and Marty Balin.
Well, she named her daughter Jesus, and then a couple days later changed it to China.
Yeah. Speaking of Paul Kantner, after Modern Times, Paul Kantner left the band, and he sued the band for the name Jefferson Starship.
Right.
And so, as a result, they just became Starship. I will point out that when they became Jefferson Starship, they got a guitar player named Craig Shakiko.
Phenomenal.
You want to talk about an underrated phenomenon on a guitar. Yeah, he was a beast. He played BC Riches, and then in the 80s, he started playing Carvins. I mean, he was just a kid when he joined Jefferson Starship. Also notable drummer for Jefferson Starship for many, many years, Ainsley Dunbar.
Right.
Who ended up leaving to go join Ozzy Osbourne, I think, at that point, maybe. My third pick, Jefferson Airplane.
Before I get to my third pick, I want to talk about, I took some heat, and guys, keep it coming. It doesn't bother me. I don't think that it was meant to be, you know, a smack in the face or anything. In the H category, I took Huey Lewis in the News. And, you know, we talked about that. Where does it fall as far as alphabetical? I think of it this way. If you go and look at Huey Lewis in the News at a record store, it's going to be in the H column. So this is going to fall kind of in the same vein. I love old doo-wop. And this band kind of took the old doo-wop and, you know, horn section and a nice little grooving guitar.
And a harmonica.
And a harmonica, yeah. But we're talking about... Jay Giles Band.
I will say about this video, for years, several years, I was convinced that one of the girls in the video was Martha Quinn, the VJ from MTV. There's a girl in there looks just like her.
I know who you're talking about. Yeah. I love Jay Giles Band. Peter Wolf was lead singer. You want to talk about somebody who's out there. Even today, you see these lead singers when they're doing interviews. David Lee Roth is a perfect example. Just hyper above, I mean, to the 10th level over. And that's the way Peter Wolf is today. Do you know who his college roommate was for about 3 months?
No.
And it was 3 months that he was trying to get a new roommate. Al Gore. Al Gore was Peter Wolf's college roommate, and he drove Al Gore nuts. Jay Giles is actually the guitar player. When you talk about the harmonica, that's Magic Dick. That's his name. That's the way it's always been.
You take this and some of the Huey Lewis... kind of a 50s revival.
I just always loved Jay Giles Band. Jay Giles just passed away a few years ago. Just one of those, I mean, he's the only one in the band besides Peter Wolf that actually looked like a rock star. Everybody else just looked like a guy came off the street and just started going to town. Probably another one of my favorite ones, and my kids used to sing it. They'd put one of their brother's name in instead of, you know how many times I heard Joe Stinks. Sadly, Peter Wolf left the band, and their drummer, he became their lead singer, which he could sing. But Peter Wolf had a big solo career, and then he came back, and he'd never really rejoined the Jay Giles Band, but he would show up, and they didn't care. They loved it that he was there. It was like the good old days. He didn't even ask to get paid. It was like, hey, I'm going to come sing tonight, or just show up. Hey, he's here. And, you know, that's a lead singer. But that's my number three, Jay Giles Band.
What are our six bands?
Judas Priest, James Gang, Journey, Joan Jett, Jefferson, Airplane, and Jay Giles Band.
I like it. Stick around, because when we come back, we've got Guilty Pleasures and Hidden Treasures. You're listening to the ABCs and 123s of Rock.
Is crazy about PJ Souls, but she wants to live a rock and roll fantasy with her favorite group, the Ramones. The new principal tries to stop the music, but the kids rock and wreck the school. Rock and roll high school, the school where the students rule. Your school could be next. Rated PG, parental guidance suggested.
Welcome back to the ABCs and 1-2-3s of Rock, Episode 10, Bands That Begin with the Letter J. We've got a list, but before we get to the list, we have a little thing called Guilty Pleasures and Hidden Treasures. And Randy, you always go first on this because you are the Guilty Pleasure guy.
Okay, this might be the first time that a band was repeated from one list to another. My Guilty Pleasure, I'm going to go with... be regarded as one of the worst rock songs ever, but I'm gonna tell you what, I actually like it.
Well, this is totally saturated with 80s sounds, you know,
and
you can't help but think 1980s and the color teal and bright yellows.
My cummerbund and bow tie was teal at my wedding.
Acid washed jeans. It's not my favorite Jefferson Airplane, Jefferson Starship song, but it was huge.
It was huge. It was everywhere.
It was huge. It played every hour on MTV almost.
Now, again, I'm not knocking Jefferson Airplane, Jefferson Starship, or Starship. I'm just saying people love the song or they hate the song, and more people, I think, hate it. And like I said, it has been regarded as the worst rock song ever. I don't know how you say that. I just think people were...
Oh, I can think of rock songs too. That are way worse.
Hell yeah, I agree. I think if I drove down the road with my windows down, I would get some looks. I will say this, not knocking them at all, but if you go through the J's, I really could not find a guilty pleasure.
Well, Randy, considering that the name Starship starts with an S and not a J, I'm not sure what to tell you.
The J's were rough, but the J's got a lot of damn good bands in it. But, you know, we'll keep the guilty pleasure. I know it's a lot of people's favorite segment. I wish I could go a little bit more in detail, but we've already talked about the Jefferson insert name here. But that's my guilty pleasure.
It's not really fair. Like I said, I could probably pick 100 rock songs that are worse than We Built the City.
Oh, I agree.
I do understand the flack it gets, though.
Right.
Because of songs like Jane and Stranger.
Tony, maybe in the future sometime you can help Randy figure out how the alphabet works.
I'll just hit you with my hidden treasure. One of my absolute top three favorite guitar players of all time, Eric Johnson, from Austin, Texas. I don't know what I could say about him that couldn't be said with his guitar.
Right.
I mean, all you have to do is listen to him. Some people don't like him, but I don't talk to those people. He appeared on Austin City Limits in 1984. To this day still, my brother and I are still pretty religious watching Austin City Limits,
right,
no matter who is on it.
Nice.
And I can remember watching PBS one Saturday night and seeing this guy in a military jacket ripping a guitar in two. It was just amazing. Just absolutely amazing. Interestingly enough, that song called Cliffs of Dover was the sound page in the May 1986 Guitar Player magazine.
Oh, cool.
Which I had. It was a different time. We didn't have the internet to go look up and see who these people are and stuff.
Al Gore hadn't even heard it yet.
Nope. In 1986, he released the album Tones, which was his first album. Off My Mind, Bristol Shore, and probably another one of his big famous songs, Zap. It was a B-side, and it was actually nominated for the Best Rock Instrumental Grammy in 1987. He's real secretive about how he gets his tone.
Oh, really?
I've seen a video where he shows his rig. He hides a piece of it.
Oh, really?
The thing. He says, this is my stuff, but then there's this stuff here that I'm not going to tell you about. And I'm sure it's something to do with TC Electronics, one of his magic pedals. I got to see him in Cincinnati 3 or 4 years ago. He was using a Blackface Fender amp. I believe he had a Marshall Plexi and a third amp, which I think is more the secret to his sound than anything, is a Fender Blackface amp that was modified by Howard Dumble. These are called Dumble amps.
Yeah.
Howard just recently passed away. And if you can find these amps, they go in excess of $100,000 right. a piece. And they're, you know, they're little combo amps. 1990 Avia Musicom, which featured Cliffs of Dover. Cliffs of Dover did go on to win the Best Rock Instrumental Grammy in 1992. But there was also songs like Song for George, Trademark, and Righteous. From a guitarist's point of view, he is absolutely one of the best guitar players you will ever hear in your life. And I'm so glad I got to see him live here a few years ago. In 1996, he finally released the album Venus Isle. I believe he re-recorded the album three times before he was happy with it, which might be why there was a six-year gap between Avia Musicom and Venus Isle. Venus Isle features SRV, song dedicated to Stevie Ray Vaughan, which features Jimmy Vaughan on guitar on it. Campbell's Night Out, Manhattan, When the Sun Meets the Sky. When the Sun Meets the Sky has Christopher Cross singing backgrounds on, which I think he got, I think Christopher Cross was the guy that got him signed somehow. This song is a perfect example of how he created these textures and layers. Because if you listen to this, this is pretty much, there's a tiny bit of keyboard going on here, but this is all guitar. This is my hidden treasure, one Mr. Eric Johnson.
Awesome.
Round two.
It's time to eliminate bands. Randy, what were the six bands again?
Judas Priest, James Gang, Journey, Joan Jett, Jefferson Airplane, Starship, and Jay Giles Band.
Okay. This is really rough, but if I had to pick one band that I'm going to eliminate, I am sadly, going to have to eliminate Jay Giles Band.
I'm glad I didn't have to make that pick. So that leaves me with Judas Priest, Journey, and Jefferson Airplane, Starship.
Now, before you do this, those are three pretty hot picks.
I agree. So again, Journey's not going anywhere. And I love Jefferson Airplane. I do. Jefferson Starship and Starship. And even though they made it into my guilty pleasure, and I don't want people to think that we're cheating or anything, but that's just we built this city, just did it for me. So I'm going to have to take out Jefferson, insert name here.
That's too bad. But of the three picks, that's probably who I would have picked to.
Yeah.
Just because Priest and Journey.
Steve Perry.
And I should have been gone.
Him and Jonathan Cain were a good, Jonathan Cain wrote the bulk, but you know what Steve Perry brought to the table when they were writing songs, and they clicked. So that leaves us with Judas Priest, James Gang, Journey, and Joan Jett. So we need to come up with a order, and we'll do that here in a moment.
Also coming up after the break, our underrated picks. In the meantime, you are listening to the ABCs and 1-2-3s of rock.
Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Welcome back to the ABCs and 1-2-3s of rock, episode 10, bands that begin with the letter J. We've got four bands that we got to turn into three spaces, but before we do that, we have our underrated picks, and I get to go first.
Steve Perry.
One of the post-metal godfathers.
Coming down the mountain, one of the children,
Perry Farrell, Dave Navarro, Eric Avery, Stephen Perkins, otherwise known as Jane's Addiction. 1988's Nothing Shocking, featuring the Mountain Song. Idiots Rule, Jane Says, Ocean Size, Up the Beach. They got signed real easily. You know, while I'm thinking about it, Jefferson Airplane got a record deal, and they had never played outside of the San Francisco area ever, and they managed to score a record deal. See, that doesn't happen today. That's not how music works today. But Jane's Addiction, they were something special when they came along. I was really into Red Hot Chili Peppers, early stuff, like Uplift Mofo Party Plan,
right.
Freaky Styley, and Jane's Addiction came along, and they were fantastic. Also on Nothing Shocking was Had a Dad, one of my favorite songs. One of the issues that arose from this album that would go on to haunt the band, Perry Farrell basically demanded 50% of the royalties for writing the lyrics alone.
Right.
And then he wanted another quarter of the remaining 50%. Right. So he was looking at getting 62.5%, and then the other three guys had to split 37.5% between them. But because he wrote the lyrics, you know, that caused a lot of friction.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Eric Avery was really, really upset about it because they were all buddies, you know,
right.
And it was supposed to be, you know, I wrote a vast majority of the music for Facing Fire, and I couldn't imagine asking for more than just my fair share. I couldn't imagine stomping my feet and saying, well, I write all the music, and you guys just did this and that. And I couldn't imagine the singer trying to demand more because he wrote lyrics.
Right.
But it happened. Just bizarre.
Well, I love Jane's Addiction, always have. I always thought Perry Farrell was a nut. Dave Navarro is one of my guitar heroes.
He's been in a lot of other bands.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he showed up in the Chili Peppers, and he was asked to join Guns N' Roses
exactly.
at one point.
Yeah.
He had a signature series, Paul Reed Smith, and it was one of the only signature series Paul Reed Smiths that you could get in a pure white. I love the white, but it had gold hardware, and I'm not a fan of gold hardware. I would own one of those if I could put, like, maybe just black hardware on it, or, like, gunmetal, or, you know, black chrome. 1990's Ritual De Lo Habitual featured Stop, Classic Girl, Been Caught Stealing.
Which is a crazy video.
Hilarious video. And the very drawn-out 3 days. Perry Farrell has been quoted as saying, that 13-month tour behind Ritual was half the reason we wound up unable to stand one another. The other half is that I am an intolerable narcissist who can't get along with anyone. What happened during the course of this album was that Avery and Navarro got sober, and Farrell and Perkins were still using.
Right.
So they isolated themselves from each other after and in between shows. The end of the tour became what was known as, any guess?
No.
Lollapalooza.
Yeah, I knew that, yes.
Yeah, man. Perry Farrell started Lollapalooza.
Yeah.
With one of his buddies.
Completely knew that, yeah.
And that's kind of how the end of that tour became.
Right.
Was the last 12 dates, I think, were the Lollapalooza tour, the first Lollapalooza. 2001, Jane's Addiction reunited and gave us the album Strays. And you know what? The album was labeled New Metal because New Metal was actually pretty kind of new if you consider, I mean, maybe it was like 5 years old, but they actually labeled Strays as a New Metal album. Perry Farrell stated that the band, quote, went into the studio thinking fast, hard, modern, and to the point. And it was a pretty fast album. It was a pretty modern album.
I agree.
Gave us the song Just Because, which was great, and the last big Jane's Addiction song, Superhero. My underrated Jane's Addiction.
Tough to put them underrated, but I get it. All right, good pick. I'm going to go in the Wayback Machine.
My baby does the hanky panky. Yeah, my baby does the hanky panky. My baby.
And this is where we're going to start. That song, it's a cover. And they just recorded it. And it was released, made its way to Pittsburgh. And started being played on the radio. Then it got a little bit bigger, and people's wondering, where is this coming from? So go to New York City, and they're meeting with every single record company. And the next day, nobody was interested. They wouldn't return his calls, or they just said, we've moved on, we want somebody else. And that was because a guy named Morris Levy, who ran Roulette Records, decided he wanted Tommy James. And if you know anything about Morris Levy, if you watch the show The Sopranos, Hesh, his character is based on Morris Levy. And Morris Levy, well, how do I say this? Organized crime? Mobster? So what had happened was Morris Levy decided he is going to represent with Roulette Records. And most of Roulette Record acts at that time were other mobsters' girlfriends or,
What a wonderful front.
Yeah, exactly. It was just a front of a way to hide their mob money. And then when Morris Levy signed Tommy James, he said, oh, by the way, Hanky Panky, that's mine. So he got nothing for that song. But the good thing, and, you know, Tommy James is not bitter about it today because he said, you know, if I would have went with a bigger company, I don't know if I'd had the freedom to do what I wanted. And, you know, I would have been a little fish in a big pond. I was the only fish in this pond. And I got to do what I wanted because not only was I playing my music and good music, I was making money.
Yeah.
So they didn't care. But he had no real idea of the music business. And if he needed money, he just went and told Morris, I need money. And they would just give him money. Well, they started wondering why we should have more money. And he would tell Morris, we need more money. We'd give you more money. But he didn't know exactly how much money he was not getting. So he came up with a genius way to kind of find out because you couldn't go by album sales. Because they would say, you know, they would buy, and you know more about this than I do, albums bought was albums sold. So when you would order a bunch of albums, you order a million albums, that's a million albums you just sold, even though none of them's been sold. And some of them, they would just disappear, or were they really, you know, it's the mob.
Reminds me of a certain former president's son who wrote a book and then filled a warehouse up with pallets of the books and became a New York Times bestseller without selling any books.
And then they started giving them away. So he went and talked to a forensic accountant, and the accountant said, well, I can tell you exactly how to find out how many albums you guys are producing. They went to the printing company and found out how many labels were getting printed for the albums. So there'd be a million albums ordered, but only 20,000 printed for the album itself. That accountant disappeared, never to be seen again.
Bad move.
Tommy James went on the run for a while until Morris assured him that nothing was going to happen. But he's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And he is legitimately, for a fact, they know that he sold over 102 million records. When CDs started coming out, that's when he got off his royalties. He estimates that he probably lost over $60 to $80 million that he didn't get paid.
Yeah, SoundScan wasn't in existence when he was there to be able to keep track of a lot of this stuff. A lot of it was done with the labels on the honor system, and you got paid what you got paid.
Right.
Hope for the best.
So he's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, mostly because of his mob ties. I don't know if it just scares people or whatever, but he was one of the first, you know, bubblegum bands, if you want to go in that direction. But just great songs. He was offered to play at Woodstock. And they just came off tour and they were in Hawaii. And the way Woodstock was pitched to him, yeah, there's a big concert at a pig farm, I'll play. I'm in Hawaii now. I don't want to play. One of his big songs. He wrote the song, but he did not have the Money Money part. He wanted a girl's name and just couldn't come up with a girl's name to repeat twice that sounded good. So he's in New York and he's looking out his window of his hotel, and he sees big letters, and it was Mutual of New York, M-O-N-Y, Money. He goes, it just came to him like that. They ran into the studio and started playing it. They got everybody they could to come and just sing all the background, I can't sing. It doesn't matter. I just need background, so all that. But one of the things that Tommy James is noted for is he's one of the few, if not the only artist that has had a number one hit in the 60s. In the 70s and in the 80s, whether he was the one who wrote it or performed it, he's one of the few that had a number one hit in all that time. So we hit on Money Money. Billy Idol did a cover of Money Money, which most people probably know this song. This was 87, and it was the number one hit for Billy Idol in 87, but also in 87.
Oh, yeah.
Another number one.
And you know what? The Tommy James version is really good. This one, not so much. I love this version, but I like the Joan Jett version better. Not taking anything away from this version, though. This version is so good.
I want to go on the record and tell you this. We've talked about my top 200 songs that I have in my car. This is the only song that's on there twice.
Both versions?
Yes. Real quick story about this song. There was two huge radio stations in New York, and they battled with each other. And Tommy James was real good friends of one of the DJs. And the other one would always get mad because his songs would always break at his buddy's radio station. So they said, don't do it anymore. We'll release them together. Both stations will get them at the same time. So Tommy James went to talk to his buddy. He goes, hey, listen, I just wrote what I think may be my biggest song ever. And he plays Crimson and Clover for him at the radio station. Not on air. But the guy hit the record button and recorded it while it was being played. Tommy James leaves. He's going down, getting into his car, and he's getting ready to leave. He hears Crimson and Clover on the radio before it was even released. That's why it was released so quickly. If you listen to the song, there's two versions of it. There's one with a big guitar in the middle of it. That was the
second. Yeah, there was a more produced
version. Well, the other radio station was furious, and they sent to Tommy James' record company a death wreath. Said, this is the death of Tommy James. You don't send death wreaths to mobsters' offices. Tommy James, I think, is maybe one of the most underrated, because a lot of people hear his songs and don't know they're his songs.
He has a lot of number one songs, but other people did them.
That's my underrated Tommy James.
I can dig it.
Final round.
We have four bands left. That's Judas Priest, James Gang, Journey, and Joan Jett.
My 1, 2, 3. Judas Priest, Journey, Joan Jett. You know, we could have talked about Elton John, Janis Joplin, Mick Jagger.
I hate the fact that I didn't mention Janis Joplin.
But yeah, Judas Priest, Journey, Joan Jett are my 1, 2, 3.
I'm going to go, Journey's my number one. Number two is James Gang. Joan Jett's my number three, but I love Judas Priest. It's just, what I'm doing, the way I rank this is, who do I listen to the most?
If you have any comments, you can send them to the ABCs and 123s of rock at gmail.com. You can also get a hold of us on Facebook at facebook.com/RandyandTonyPresent. And you can go to abcsand123s.buzzsprout.com to catch up and listen to all the episodes. Please do us a favor. Give us a rating. Give us a comment, good or bad. We don't care.
Just bad for Tony, good for me.
Yeah, bad for me is fine. Until next episode, I'm Tony Phillips.
Randy McGuire.
You've been listening to the ABCs and 123s of rock.